It's called The Chicken Reel by Leroy Anderson, performed by an unidentified orchestra here, conducted by Frederick Fennell. On Live and Local on FM 90.9, the show is your connection to local performances, and our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's music heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring new exhibits entitled On the Road Again, Cruising Coast to Coast with America's Music. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. The Chicken Reel is one of many pieces of music of considerable variety that will be on the concerts this Friday and Saturday by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, their Holiday Pops in the Heartland program. And coming up in just a moment, I'll be talking with music director Alistair Willis about that concert. And at about quarter after four, we will meet Steve Gillette and Cindy Mangson. Steve, songwriter and singer, of course, of very long standing for many reasons, his own performances and, of course, performances by others of his songs. And also Cindy Mangson, the two are married, a singer-songwriter in her own right, a performer on multiple instruments and involved in multiple collaborations. They're coming to Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana Wednesday evening as a presentation of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival, and we'll be hearing a lot from their most recently released album called Home by Dark. It's Live and Local today on FM 90.9. My first guest, Alistair Willis, music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. Welcome back to the show, Alistair.
Hi, Kevin. Happy holidays.
Thank you very much. And am I thinking right that this particular holiday concert is coming perhaps a bit earlier than usual?
Well, yes. In years past, we've had the traditional holiday concert sort of closer to Christmas. But last year, for the first time, for many reasons, scheduling, halls, and my availability, we had to hold this concert before Thanksgiving. So, of course, I said, let's do a Thanksgiving Pops concert, and we weren't sure that that would do so well. But it didn't seem right to do a full-out Christmas Hanukkah program before Thanksgiving. So we met in the middle, and we did a first half of Thanksgiving-themed music and a second half of more traditional Christmas and Hanukkah fare, and it worked so well, we're going to do the same again this year.
But with a new program,
But with a new program, yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, you know, you're just sort of getting into the whole commercial thing of let's start Christmas right after Halloween.
Well, yeah, so but only by the time we get to the second half. The first half will be very much Thanksgiving, which is only a week away now.
It is only a week away, yeah. It's coming up a whole lot faster than I think probably all of us expect, especially given that it's going to be 50 degrees outside most of this week.
And hopefully no winds.
Enough of that. Mm. So the Thanksgiving part is, don't usually think of Thanksgiving as a time for holiday pops concerts, at least I don't anyway. Is it difficult to find music that works for that occasion?
Oh, sure. I mean, if you compare with how much music there is for the second half of the program, I mean, there's such a ton of Christmas Hanukkah music out there. But Thanksgiving, we've got to be a little bit creative, and you know, we did some wonderful pieces last year, and this year we found some more wonderful pieces. We're going to take a little bent on food this year, Thanksgiving being very much about food. So we have some wonderful pieces, for example, John Rutter's Good Ale. Got to have good ale at Thanksgiving. From Oliver, Food, Glorious Food. That's just perfect for the mood and the fun of our first half. Chicken Reel, since last year the turkey got a mention in Turkey in the Straw. We thought we'd focus on the chicken this year. And then we found the Prayer of Thanksgiving, which we'll invite everyone to sing with us. The Promise of Living from the Tenderland Suite by Copland is just perfect to end our first half with its mood and its blessing and its mention of Thanksgiving and plowing the fields and reaping the harvest. It's just wonderful. And for a lot of these pieces, we will be joined by the Illinois State University chorus, which is going to be fantastic.
Are they going to be performing at both locations?
They are, and in both halves. They have Thanksgiving. I'm just losing the line there. They have Thanksgiving contributions for us, as well as Christmas and Hanukkah contributions too. So they're going to be well employed and leading us all in singing a few songs, and just can't wait to have some choral music as part of our concert.
And they'll be doing things exclusively with the orchestra or also some by themselves?
They've got one a cappella piece that they're doing, and the rest will all be with orchestra.
You also are involving, this is sort of a big community event here, a youth orchestra from each of the communities you're playing, the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony, which, by the way, just had a concert yesterday, I think.
Unfortunately, they had a concert program, but it was unfortunately postponed due to the weather.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So hopefully that will be rescheduled very soon.
I shall have to check in with Deanne Bryant, their conductor, and
right.
try to get some info on that. And then the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony, based in Springfield, on those concerts.
Right. It's just such a wonderful... the whole concert really is a community affair. We have other guests, too, but focusing on the youth orchestras, to have them play with us side by side is a life-changing experience for these young musicians, to play next to a professional in a concert situation. It's such a great opportunity for them and a great opportunity for the Illinois Symphony Orchestra musicians, too. And it's just a special sound, a special experience when we have all those people on stage.
I got a chance to ask Deanne Bryant what it meant to her youth symphony kids to sit side by side, and you indicated that it's a good experience for the Illinois Symphony professionals. How so?
Well, how so? Well, we're all about giving back to the community, and this is the wonderful way that musicians can do that is to help other musicians. And the youth orchestras and professional orchestras are such an integral part of the community fabric. And when we can be doing things together and all helping each other, it's a wonderful feeling of collaboration, of community, but also in passing on in experience. I mean, the musicians get the young musicians get to look up to the older musicians, and the older ones, you know, get a great feeling in being able to help and lead and be an example for the younger ones.
What will the youth orchestra's involvement in the concert be?
They're opening our second half, which is our Christmas, more traditional affair of music. And they're playing the first two pieces side by side with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. The first will be Joy to the World, which will be extra special because there'll be a chance for the audience to sing as well. And then we're going to play the famous Farandole from Bizet's.
L'Arlésienne,
yes.
Yeah, and then some dances, as one might expect, from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker.
Yes, and that will involve two wonderful ballet companies, Springfield Ballet in Springfield and USA Ballet based here in Bloomington.
Oh, fantastic. So this really is a major collaboration. That has to be a bit of a challenge for those folks who are involved in logistics.
Oh, the logistics, yes, I think are the hardest thing about it. But once we're all on stage doing what we do and sharing the arts with each other and with our audiences, you know, magic happens, and it's such a special event to see and to unite with families and communities. It's just a wonderful, wonderful event. This is traditionally our best-selling concert, and we love how much support this gains and gathers in both communities.
Okay, well, it sounds like a fabulous set of collaborations in the Holiday Pops in the Heartland programs from the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. Bloomington's performance Friday at 8 o'clock will happen at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Springfield's performance Saturday at 8 will be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield. Concert comments Friday night at 7:15 and Saturday at 7 o'clock. And my guest is the music director of the Illinois Symphony, Alistair Willis. Thanks very much for joining us, and it sounds like it should be a lot of fun. I hope that will be true for all.
We certainly intend it to be. Thanks for having me, Kevin, and happy holidays to you and all your wonderful listeners.
Promise of Living from the Tenderland by Aaron Copland here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, where our program is made possible by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting you to Krannert Center Native American House and the American Indian Studies Program's co-presentation of Chocolate Woman Dreams the Milky Way on November 21st and 22nd at 7:30 p.m. For more information, visit krannertcenter.com. Stay tuned next for a conversation with Steve Gillette and Cindy Mangson, singer-songwriter, husband and wife duo who are coming to Heartland Gallery in Urbana Wednesday evening.
My first two-wheeler was old when I got it. It was newfound freedom. It was red on black. Those big white tires would slide on the gravel when I'd ride along the railroad track. Straight downhill on Skyline Road, no hands, no brakes, I'm lucky I know. But the wind was singing in my ear, and I never looked back. Just be home by dark, there's time enough tomorrow. But there's a place where they know you and love you for who you are. When there was color in the sky and the street lights were coming on, I'd take the corner like a stolen babe and be home by dark. Now that I've got a daughter and a son, I get to figure out how it's done. But the clock is cruel, the boss is anxious, little pictures have great big ears. We worry that we can't provide all the things that this life requires. And somehow just being in that circle banishes all my fears. And I'll be home by dark, there'll be time enough tomorrow. There's a place where they know you and love you for who you are. When there's color in the sky and the street lights are coming on, I'll finish up working and be home by dark. So many people in this hungry world travel that journey alone. What I would wish for everyone is just what I want for my own. To be home by dark and time for tomorrow. Place where they know you and love you for who you are. When there's color in the sky and the street lights are coming on, and the sunlight fades away, morning is enough. Always that long to be home by dark.
That's a song called Home by Dark, which is the title song from a CD released just last year by Steve Gillette and Cindy Mangson. Steve, somebody whose songwriting has been known for some decades by many in the, I guess we could say, country and folk worlds. Cindy also does some songwriting, but is, I think, probably best known for her singing and presentations of lots of collaborations and many other things as well. And they came together, what, 1998, if I'm remembering?
1988.
You know, oh. It gets so hard to remember which decade it was.
You were just a child
really.
Then, I'm sure.
And I even have the crib sheet to tell me the answer in front of me, and I wasn't looking at it. In any event.
Well, all I know, it was 25 years ago. That's what I know. This is the 25th.
So Steve Gillette, Cindy Mangson are, as you can tell, with me on the line here on Live and Local. And they're going to be performing on Wednesday night at 7:30 at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana as a presentation of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival. Steve and Cindy, thanks very much for joining us on the program today.
It's a pleasure, Kayla. It's great to be with you.
Tell me a little bit about that song, Home by Dark. It represents, I think, for you, Steve, anyway, one aspect of the types of songs you do, which is to say songs of time, nostalgia in this case.
Yeah, we were joking about nostalgia. I was saying that Peter Berryman made the comment that there's so much more of it now, you know. And really, the idea that came to me, of course, what happens a lot of times with songs is you'll have that little germinating moment when a cliche or an expression that you've known a long time will suddenly hang together with some emotional thought or a picture. And I just had that glimpse of a kid on a bike at 8 or 9 years old on his way home, you know, had to be home by dark, and how the parents never really worried too much about kids back in those days. I'm talking about the 50s, of course. It really seemed like we were kind of free to roam, and as long as you were home by dark, and it was always, you know, when the streetlights come on, that's when you had to really get there.
Well, I was going to say it certainly was the case in the 60s as well when I was when I was a young kid, and things have changed that way. Did you take yourself back mentally to your own childhood? Is that essentially you in the song?
Sure, absolutely. You know, later on, not when I was that young, but a little bit older, 12, 13, I had a paper route. And where I grew up in near Los Angeles in a place called Whittier, California, we had quite a few hills. And I just remember having to walk my bicycle up the hills, but I looked forward to getting rid of all my papers and making that soaring dive down the one big hill and really out of control, you know. But part of the idea was that we immerse ourselves so completely in that childhood experience, we don't always see beyond it. We don't really know. I always say in the introduction of the song on stage that didn't it seem like there were scrapes we got into that we were just so glad that nobody, our parents never found out about, you know. But also the song sort of explores the area of drawing back the camera a little bit and looking at maybe a longer arc and thinking about what becomes important as you come into adulthood, and also that sense of wanting to know that everyone has a place to go to be home by dark, you know, that idea.
I want to pursue some of the shifts in your own songwriting that have happened, Steve, over time. You have quite a number of songs that have been covered by people like John Denver, Garth Brooks, Linda Ronstadt, Tammy Wynette, and a lot of others. And I guess you could say that was sort of the popular, not exactly pop songs, but popular time of writing a particular type of song. Yeah. When and why did that shift for you?
Well, I think when you're younger and you're starting out, just you follow any opportunity to make a noise, to get some, you know, to resonate, to get some validation. And of course, this was my beginnings come during the folk scare, as Tom Paxton calls it, of the 60s. And the first real good break that happened was when Tom Campbell and I wrote a song called Darcy Farrow, and Ian and Sylvia recorded it. And we were such fans of theirs, and part of it was that they were taking traditional elements and doing some writing or some new, bringing them to life in a new way. And that was just as we were emerging into the folk and folk rock and early rock days. And so it was an exciting time, but you sort of follow the opportunity as it would present itself to get songs to your friends and some of your friends that you just started out with on the open mics started to get a chance to record themselves. I'm thinking of people like Linda Ronstadt and John Denver, whom, you know, if you show your songs just to your friends and then your friends start to get record deals, it can be a good thing. And but I think in recent years, Cindy and I both celebrate the fact that we have an audience that will sustain us, give us that great luxury of doing the kind of writing that we most care about, so we can write about things that are a little more thorny, a little more, real life issues for us. It's okay to grow older. It's okay to explore mythology and transcendence and things that not necessarily have a home in the pop world, you know. So we're grateful to have the chance to kind of, you know, become ourselves in a way over the long haul.
So, Steve, when you and Cindy got married, what, 1988? Almost 25 years ago.
It was actually the next spring, April of 89, that we got married, yeah.
Yeah. How did that shift your songwriting again, if it did?
Again, you know, that theme of being sort of self-sufficient. Always before, I was working, I kind of had one foot in the music industry, because that really represented opportunity and, of course, income. But when Cindy and I started performing together and traveling together, we found that because it was just one household, it wasn't like a lot of the bands that have to divide up the nights take, you know, in three or four ways. So we were able really to go our own way, go to places we wanted to go, spend time with, you know, the community that we wanted to be in and do the festivals and all that. And it gave us a great freedom. I like to say even really a magic carpet to be present for an audience that is much more so, and I hate to sound negative, but if you're talking about the pop audience or the commercial audience, you're only as important to them as last week's or this week's Billboard magazine, you know. But if you're talking about the folk music audience, we have the great luxury of playing for people who have a kind of shared consciousness that goes, you know, back to the civil rights movement and the anti-war, or the Vietnam era. And so we have that wonderful sense of people who have been in the same community for 40 years or so, and things are meaningful in a deeper and a more, I think, a more tractable or a tangible way. So it gives us a great freedom and a great validation to do the music that we really most care about. You know?
Question really for you both. Since you mentioned the folk audiences, over time, do you see that they have, the audiences themselves have changed at all that would either require you or allow you to write songs differently?
I wouldn't really say that. I think, you know, this particular form of music and the coffee houses and folk concerts on a small scale are very much tied to our age group, which is, I used to feel sort of sorry about that, and now I feel like it's just what it is, and we grew up with this music, and a lot of people who come to the concerts really have a long history with the music, so it's a very comfortable living room sort of atmosphere. There are a lot of young people playing old-timey music, and the dance scene is very strong, and I'm not worried about the music continuing, but I think the particular kind of thing that we do is, for whatever reason, really tied to our age group pretty closely. Of course, I'm not nearly as old as Steve, but, you know.
Oh, I don't know how far we want to go down that road, except you did say your age.
You know, I worked hard for this white hair, I want to say.
Well, you did say your age group, so that I guess that requires us to say what age group are we talking about here?
Well, I was born in 1950, and Steve?
I was born in November of 1942. I'll be 71 years old next week. I can't believe it.
Which is just plain silly. I mean,
oh,
really.
I think that we would be.
So does that mean that, do I understand you to say then that your audience at coffee shops and the, for example, the gallery concert you're going to give here is primarily an older audience?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
you know, we make them have a lot of life experience before we let them in the door.
I guess for some reason that surprises me. I don't know if it should or not,
well,
because there's certainly lots of young folks working in I guess you could say, the folk era? Or do we call younger folk musicians singer-songwriters now?
I think that they have their own audience. I think the people who have listened to us for a long time still listen to us, and the younger kids have the people that we don't even know who they are, but they're also playing at the coffee houses and Cafe Lita and stuff. But of course, they attract their own age group. Just like when we were young, we were going to hear people at pretty much our age, or a little older. Yeah, maybe an American phenomenon about how you listen to the people of your era.
Steve, you had something to add to that.
You know, I think a lot of it has to do, I remember for me too, a lot of it has to do with being able to identify with the person on the stage. And of course, when I was just starting, the people on the stage were people like Judy Collins and Joan Baez and Carolyn Hester, and a lot of them became friends, but they were up there way above, my sense of starting out. But it was the sense of being able to, kind of like movie stars, you know, where you want to have attractive and youthful and charismatic people. But I think one of the things about staying with it longer is that you get a little bit beyond that that kind of sweet spot of idolatry or hero kind of thing. And then I think it becomes more a matter of content, the wisdom of the quality of the thought and the quality of the storytelling. And so I like to think that you can read Mark Twain and not ask yourself, well, is he in his 40s or is he in his, he'd be 120 today, writing the great work that he did. So I think then it becomes more a question of trying to do something really wonderful, and finally learning to do some of the things that, so sometimes I'll make a joke about the younger performers and say, well, it's okay, we're patient, we'll wait for them to come along, and of course that would be a very obnoxious stance to take, but I think that there's still more to be learned,
Well, speaking of learning and younger, in this case, songwriters, you present workshops. I think some of them, at least one of them, in a regular location. And the next song I wanted to play, I believe, is by someone from one of those workshops. A song off of your CD called, off the CD called "Home by Dark," but the song is called "Holy Smoke."
Yeah, this is a song we learned from our friend Doug Johnson, who's been a regular. He's one of the most loyal. Come all 10 meetings of our songwriting workshop in California. It started in Big Sur, so we called it the Big Sur Songwriting Workshop, but we moved over to Santa Cruz because it was a lot easier to accommodate all of our people. And we've just had the best time every spring kind of nurturing a group. I don't mean to say it's like they're all very talented people, and we just listen and share our insights about the songs and be real supportive of each other, of the whole group. So we're real proud to do one of Doug's songs.
And this particular song having to do with something that, has been in the news lately and tends to be often in the summertime, which is to say a California forest fire.
Yeah, Doug actually wrote this song when he lived in a town called Julian, California, in the mountains outside San Diego. And he went through two really bad fires there. And then he finally decided to move, but the irony is that he moved up near Yosemite, where, of course, they had a really, really bad fire this year. So don't follow Doug, whatever you do. But as soon as we heard this song, we both really, really loved it. It's just a interesting way to tell the story.
The joke used to be that if you moved to California, you might fall into the Pacific. Now I guess it's you might go up in smoke.
Yeah.
Or both on the same day, yeah.
or both. Well, the song's called "Holy Smoke" by Doug Johnson. It's performed. Now, I actually forget, Cindy, are you singing on this one also?
Yeah.
Okay,
she's doing the finger-picking guitar. She's doing that snaky guitar
I sat down with Doug's record and figured out how the heck he had his guitar tuned so I could figure out how to play it.
All right.
Steve, so I got to play guitar.
Steve Gillette and Cindy Mangson, they're coming to Heartland Gallery in Urbana Wednesday night at 7:30. They're my guests today on Live and Local here on FM 90.9.
Ashes in the atmosphere, you can feel the tension and the fear. Grandma's chickens are acting queer. Here we go again. Could be a branch on a high wire catches. Careless kids playing with matches. Dry grass where the lightning flashes. Here we go again. There's a devil in the sand and a wind. From the mountain of the sleeping Indian. Grandma calls for kicking goat. She comes on the run, she tears her coat upon the limbs of a creosote. And here we go again. They all pile into a pickup bed with the rolled-up rug and the Rhode Island Reds. Adrenaline drumming and someone says, here we go again. There's a devil in the sand and a wind. From the mountain of the sleeping Indian. Galloping across the nation of the Kumeyaay, he's riding on a crimson stallion through a smoky obsidian sky. From Witch Creek to Borrego, he's blotting out the sun. In Hellhole Canyon, the bighorn sheep don't know which way to run. They don't know which way to run. Safe in the desert round Yaqui Wells, an old woman fans an abalone shell, smudging the sage and a prayer might heal. Here we go again. Far to the west, conjured clouds bring the rain in sheets and shrouds. Kicking goat, she laughs out loud. Here we go again. There's a devil in the sand and a wind. From the mountain of the sleeping Indian.
The song is called Holy Smoke, written by Doug Johnson, who I guess you could say is a protege of Steve Gillette and Cindy Mangson, who are my guests on Live and Local. And they'll be in Urbana for a concert presented by the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival, Wednesday night, 7:30. I want to give time to Cindy's songwriting. And it appears, Cindy, from a particular album you have and also the fact that this same topic creeps onto the most recent duo CD you have with your husband, that you have a thing for songs having to do with cats.
Well, I went through a difficult period, but I've had a lot of therapy now, and so I've recovered. No, I did do a whole album of cat songs, mostly because I had written a song called Rudy's Big Adventure, which was a true story that was sent to me, and I couldn't get over the story, and so the only way to tell it all the time was to write it into a song. And it was a story about a cat who put his head in a garbage disposal and this terrible series of unlikely events that led to it. And the cat was okay, so it was all right to write the song because the cat was all right in the end. But I didn't know what to do with the song except make a whole album of cat songs. So then I started writing a little more and looking for other songs, and there it was. And there was a beautiful picture of our cat, and she insisted that it be the cover. So there you go.
Well, I was going to ask
you
if I was going to ask if there must be a cat in your life, and apparently so. Her name is Alice.
Yes. Her name is Alice, and she runs the whole joint. Yeah, she's our manager.
She's with her foster family at present. They have another cat too, Rudy, the big orange cat. So she's pretty happy there. But
Alice has two homes. Really, she's at her country house now, and yeah.
She
puts up with a lot.
Sounds like she lives well and likes to observe birds.
She does like to observe birds. We have a little bird feeder outside the back window, and I sit there with Alice, and we talk about the birds, and mostly she chatters her teeth a lot. That's her response, and I try to learn the names of the birds in her language and teach her something, but I'm not sure how that's going.
Sings a joyful song with no beginning and no end. He ruffles up his feathers, he opens up his throat. He does not sing for pleasure, though there's rapture in each note. While you and I tell stories to explain and comprehend, to lull the baby into sleep, to tame the rain and wind. The bird in the wood sings a joyful song. It has no past or future, no beginning and no end, for time is not its master. In the forest far from the beaten trail, the bird in the wood sings on and on, but does not tell the tale. I would wander in that forest where mysteries abound, enchanted by the ray of light that sparkles in the sound. No past or future, no beginning and no end. We fill our days with striving, and regret can haunt the night. But the song of the thrush in the deep green wood recalls us to the light. What a gift to find a moment between the dark and dawn, when the universe is cradled in the heartbeat and the song. No past or future, no beginning and no end. The bird in the wood. Beginning and no end, for time is not its master.
Birdsong. About a cat named Alice and her adventures with birds, I guess, more or less.
Well, if that's what you want it to be about, that's what it can be about.
Cindy Mangson wrote that, sang it, and performed it with her husband, Steve Gillette, here on Live and Local. They're going to be at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana Wednesday evening. I asked earlier about songs about time, and I guess I would follow that up with the notion of songs about place. Steve, you said you were, I think, born and or raised in California.
I grew up in Southern California, yeah, and a good place to grow up in a good time, you know, in that post-war era.
When there were still orange groves and avocado groves.
Yeah. And you could surf and ski on the same day.
And Cindy, where are you originally from?
I grew up in Niagara Falls, New York, and then moved to the Chicago area for quite a long time.
And now you're together, you're in Vermont.
Yes, we are.
Just a stunning part of the country, at least in my opinion.
Well, it's a nice place to go home, yep.
Have topics for you shifted as your place has shifted?
Oh, yeah.
And so how?
Well, of course, you know, we talked a little bit about the music industry and doing kind of an apprenticeship, trying to make inroads or, you know, get songs recorded and that sort of thing. I guess I could admit to even the kind of the star syndrome of just wanting to be discovered and, you know, that whole being close to the magnetic field of... you know, of the music industry throughout a lot of those times, 70s and 80s. But I think Cindy and I have that wonderful kind of magic carpet, we like to say, of being able to play for our own audience, and it doesn't really depend on what the music industry has anointed. You know, it's more like we're free to develop the stories and the kinds of musical presentation that we want to make, and so we're free to play instruments that... you know, that serve that. I've been trying to play more and more fiddle. I'm still not ready for, you know, to for prime time. But Cindy plays concertinas and guitar and some banjo. And so we really are free to play the kind of music that we really care about and for an audience that not only expects us to be ourselves, but they, you know, they encourage that. And they want to know what's important to us in a deeper way than we might be able to get away with in the popular music field. So I think our music has somewhat grown, and yet still once in a while we'll write something that might have some tangency with the music industry. We stopped off in Nashville a week ago Wednesday just to visit with some friends, and so I still have a couple of co-writing situations, collaborations. So there's still a little bit of a, like I say, one foot in that world, but I think Cindy and I have the best of all possible situations by being able to do the songs we most want to do, you know.
And does having your own record company help with that, I would imagine?
It does. Cindy knows better than I about how it all works, but I'm always joking that we must be the most successful record company ever because all of our titles are paid for and all of our titles are still in print. Of course, we have a brand new one coming out in another week that we... haven't paid for yet, but we're real excited about it. It's all songs of Lou and Peter Berryman. So we were joking the other day about being at a point where we just can do whatever we want. So well, even though it's on a small scale.
Well, and I might as well mention that Lou and Peter Berryman have actually been in our area twice, I think, in the last year or so, and I got a chance to talk to them the first of those two times.
And, we just had a little article written in the Madison newspaper on Sunday about the Barry, we call the album Barry Mania, and we just got 10 orders online from Madison, so it's going to be big in Madison.
Well, maybe you'll get a few more as a result of this conversation. By the way, Steve Gillette and Cindy Bangson's record company called Compass Rose Music, and I think that actually is your website, isn't it, CompassRoseMusic.com?
That's right, CompassRoseMusic.com.
All right. In thinking about place, I guess I was partly thinking about these instrumental tunes that are on your most recent CD. Instrumentals always at least feel to me, if we're talking kind of folk, kind of old-time type songs, as if they're rooted in place. And I wonder, since one of these you wrote, Cindy, and another one you borrowed from somebody else,
right.
Do you feel that way at all yourself?
The first one is called the Manomet Waltz, and I actually did write the first part of that tune in the car on my way to a place called Manomet, which is in Massachusetts. And it happened that a distant cousin of mine from Finland was visiting, and we were taking him around to see some of the places where our family had lived here in the States. And Manomet was a place I used to spend summers where my uncles had a little cottage. It's near Plymouth, Mass., near Cape Cod. And they had a cottage with no electricity, no running water, and it was just such a great place to go as a kid with a bunch of cousins. So the first part of that tune came as I was showing him that place. And the second tune is a 19th century tune by a Scottish fiddler named J. Scott Skinner, a tune called The Mathematician. And he used to try to write tunes that nobody but he could play, the really intricate, fast tunes. He was quite a self-promoter and, probably unbearable Scotsman, but he sure wrote good tunes.
And
I play those on the English concertina.
And just because this came up in a conversation I was having with somebody recently, it's come up before. What's the difference between a concertina and an accordion?
Well, the concertina is a subset of the dysfunctional accordion family. That's what I like to say. And what I play is English concertina, which it's a chromatic instrument, and each button is a single note like the key on a piano, and it's the same note whether I'm expanding or contracting the bellows. So I really think of it as kind of a keyboard.
Does that help? Yeah. Well, I've seen different types of concertinas, and I just kind of wanted to hear one person's answer, as we'll hear it right now. A concertina played by Cindy Manx, and her instrumental Manomet Waltz with J. Scott Skinner's tune, The Mathematician. And there's piano and guitar. Who's doing which on here?
Steve's playing guitar, and Pete Sutherland is playing piano. Probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with Pete. He's played with a lot of New England musicians. He's the best New England fiddler we know, and he's a secretly wonderful piano player. So we've used him to produce, arrange, play fiddle, banjo, piano, guitar. Basically, when we need a musician, we call Pete.
And here it is, Manomet Waltz and the Mathematician from Home by Dark by Cindy Gillette and Cindy Mangson, who will be in Urbana for a concert Wednesday night. This is Live and Local. Manomet Waltz and The Mathematician. performed by Cindy Mangson, featured on vocals and the concertina, and also Steve Gillette on guitar. Pete Sutherland is on the piano from Home by Dark, by Steve and Cindy, and they'll be in Urbana for a concert Wednesday night. Then there are my guests on Live and Local. We just have a few minutes left. I think we're going to come up on another nostalgic tune, I guess. But I wanted to ask Cindy a little bit about collaborations. There's a line in your biography that says you're particularly well-known for collaborations. What's especially rewarding for you in that as opposed to solo performing or recording?
Oh, I would much rather play with other people at this point. I really love singing harmony. I love making up harmonies, and it keeps things interesting and challenging. I one of the hardest things for me to do usually is to, if Steve's playing guitar and singing, and if I'm playing concertina, I'm trying to play one harmony and sing another harmony. And it, you know, I feel like it's a brain exercise. It's a little bit of a problem-solving thing, and it, you know, keeps me young.
Well, Cindy's work with her trio, too, the harmonies with Ann Hills and Priscilla Herdman, they're each of those albums is a study of harmony that's just wonderful. All three of them are such sticklers for, you know, they won't do two verses the same way, you know, so it's very creative and beautiful. I think their voices sounded beautiful together.
Well, and Steve and Cindy have both done plenty of their own solo efforts, and, of course, now they're in this permanent collaboration with each other.
I'd like to think so.
Which is in many ways, which has really been wonderful for me to experience through this particular album. And listeners can experience them live, which is the best way of all to do it. They'll be at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana Wednesday night at 7:30, presented by the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival. Steve Gillette and Cindy Mangson. Thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local. And this is a tune by another songwriter named Joe Carlson.
We love to find wonderful songs, and this song seemed to really fit the Home by Dark concept, if there was a concept. It's like you say, it's a song about time and a little bit nostalgic, but it's a father singing to his young son about what life was like when he was growing up, and putting a special emphasis on the beauty of nature and discovering the life of the forest when that all starts to seem a little in jeopardy. So I think the song walked that line very nicely. I learned this actually at a campfire at the Kerrville Folk Festival from my friend Joe Carlson, who's one of my favorite picking buddies at that festival, and I just felt that it had a magic about it. And we've also made a video of it, too. I don't know if it's appropriate, but if people want to look for it on YouTube, it's called Blue, and you can find it with our names. And we tried to capture all the blue sky we could from Colorado to we even have an alligator and a manatee swimming together in a beautiful crystal clear spring in Florida, a place called Blue Spring.
Well, in a way, I didn't really think about it, but we've wrapped up almost a good chunk of this conversation with this song. It's about place, it's about nature, it's about
that's right.
Nostalgia, so it all comes together. Blue.
Thanks so much for having us.
My pleasure. Steve Carlson.
Thank you,
Steve Gillette and Cindy Mangson. Song by Joe Carlson.
Song by Joe Carlson.
And this is Live and Local.
There's time for just one story, then you must close your eyes. I've told you that one so many times. Well, it was long ago, it's out of sight and out of mind. Back when I was just a boy and the sky was blue, blue. It was blue. And on the weekends, we would pack a lunch and take a hike and watch the wild things growing back when the sky was blue. Blue. It was blue. Oh yes, and tell about the green trees that grew up high and the rabbits in the garden back when the sky was blue. was blue.
Programs on WILL are made possible with the support of the Friends of WILL and in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, an agency of the state of Illinois. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for joining us today. On tomorrow's program, we'll have live in our studio the Irish band Comas, who are going to be playing in Urbana tomorrow evening. You're listening to 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. It's 44 degrees, coming up on 5 o'clock.